Wildlife Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have another show dealing with metaphysics and science and elements that I would call spiritual for sure. And I think that tonight's show is going to probably surprise most people, because I thought we'd talk about God's test for humanity. Now, most people think that, I think that most people think that, you know, God is not necessarily doing things to people. And so the show itself, and I think people believe that I believe that, which I do, by the way. The point is that tonight's show is not about necessarily what it sounds like, because the test for humanity is to realize that humanity tests themselves. That's the test. Okay, see, I'm giving away the big part of the show right there. See, the test for humanity is, of God's test, is to learn that humanity tests itself. And that's the problem. Taking responsibility for one's own existence, for one's own life, for the lives of others that are around us and that we have anything to do with, which is virtually everybody, means that ultimately we are going to pass God's test if we do that. Okay? But most people do not take responsibility for the fact that they are testing themselves and others are testing them as well among humanity, and that the things that are outside of humanity that most people say, well, that's an act of God, or sometimes they'll say nature, depending upon their belief structure, those are not really tests in and of themselves. And I will explain that in a few minutes. So tonight's show is kind of an interesting show because it's got a lot of surprises in it. It's not going to necessarily be the way it sounds like the description from the title would indicate. Okay, so a lot of you might say, well, how come you said God's test for humanity? If in fact humanity is testing itself, why'd you say humanity's test for humanity or something like that? Well, that's because we still have to look at the beginning of creation. We have to look at it from the standpoint of God to understand why this does make sense to talk about God's test for humanity. Because if in the creation of our universe, including all the life within it, the beginning of that life, and within, obviously, the life of humanity, within that creation, God decided that humanity needed a test, even though the test comes from humanity. But humanity needed to be tested, and the way the test is created and imposed comes from the structure that God decided, including some of the laws of the universe, which follow God's thought, but which we have the ability to choose not to listen to and to break, and some of the other ways that God has communicated with us, usually through what we consider to be enlightened ones, prophets, etc. And so when we examine the beginning, it tells us that there's a need for humanity to be tested, because the test is about moving closer to God. And the way all life moves closer to God is to move up a hierarchy of kingdoms. And within each kingdom, a hierarchy of consciousness and sense development for each particular species, etc. So hopefully you're following what I'm saying right now, because this is a lot of information very quickly at the beginning of the show anyway. And so this is a process in which we are participating because God created the universe in a certain way. Now, some of the tenets that I inter- interpret and believe, and that are stated in Ageless Wisdom, that explain God's reasoning, you might say, are that it is important for humanity to have freedom of choice. It is the very first significant element of thought that we can say is of spirit or God's mind, or God's thought within its mind. And it is the very part of that mind that says, before all else, let there be freedom for those things that are alive and have the ability to exercise choice. The more capability something has to exercise choice, the greater it has freedom, and the freedom must then be exercised based upon the ability to make choice. And the ability to make choice is a combination of the two things I just had said earlier. Those two things are consciousness, which is the second part of God's mind, and senses, which is the third part. Okay? Say that again. I know. All right, I'll say it again. The first part of God's mind, the very first thing that God says is, okay, life's got to have choice. Life's got to have freedom to choose. And the freedom is based upon its capability, the life's capability to make choices. Okay. So something that has more ability to make a choice is more free to make it. Something that has less ability to make a choice doesn't need and doesn't have as much freedom. But it doesn't notice it doesn't have the freedom at the same time, because its senses are lacking to be aware of that problem or possibility. And God says also that what gives people the ability to have that choice is the ability to be responsive to any actions or interactions, both with anything else, and the consciousness of the ability to understand what those interactions mean. Put it all together and you got God's mind. Those are the three parts of God's mind. And when those three parts are working okay, then each and every choice that leads to greater freedom with increased consciousness and better awareness, all three together, raises or elevates the life in the kingdom that is contained within until it eventually reaches a point where it can literally elevate itself out of the kingdom it's in and move up into the next kingdom, which brings it closer to its own creator or to God. Okay? That's the formula. Okay? That's God's reasoning. That's God's formula in creating the basis for our universe. Now, I'm talking about the universe. I'm not just talking, you know this, but some of you do. I'm not just talking about the physical place we find to be our universe right now, but I'm talking about all seven major dimensions with seven subdimensions, a total of 49, for the entire universe is what I'm talking about. If you're into string theory, it might make some sense to you, but it doesn't matter. On a scientific note, I'm talking about it more allegorically and in terms of what I understand to be the truth about how the universe functions. All right, so this is true, therefore, in all parts of the universe. It's true for all kingdoms, but the human kingdom does have a special role to play, and let me explain that. The human kingdom is the first kingdom that has self-awareness and consciousness and choice, actually, about its own creator. Now, what does that mean? That's God, right? God is its creator. So it is self-aware. It has consciousness and choice about the existence of God. Now, why don't horses? Why aren't they self-aware? And why aren't they conscious of and make the choice to believe in or not believe in, have faith in, have understanding of, which you may gain through the show and other places, of God? Why don't horses do that? Well, if you recall from the beginning, I said that you've got to have the ability to be aware, or you can't have the choice. Horses, great animals. So are dogs and cats. And I love the kingdom of animals, terrific. They're the closest one below us, right? The animal kingdom. But they are missing something very important. They have centers, sometimes resembling the centers in humanity, in the physical sense. So the energy part of their centers may be similar to humans. They may have a heart chakra and a crown chakra and a corresponding sense or senses to those chakras. But what they don't have in those two chakras that humans do to make them human is consciousness of what those two centers represent. Well, those two centers represent spirits. They represent the ability to sense and understand. Understanding is very important. But sense first, spirit. Now you could say, oh, wait a second. I think that some animals do have a sense of spirit. Yes, they do. But they don't understand what the sense means. So they have the sense. They have the physical heart chakra of love. They can sense love. It's a great thing. But they can't understand what the love means and where it may come from, in this case through spirit, which is God's thought. They say, oh, it comes from God. Humans immediately react that way. We consider virtuous a part of God. The majority of us do that. And we don't have to be taught it or anything. But animals don't. How do we know that? Well, haven't found any horses lately that have built any churches that they're going to on the various days of the week to rejoice and to be closer with their Creator. They don't do a thing about it. There hasn't been a horse I know of that preaches. There hasn't been a horse that I understand as it would understand me in terms of it choosing on its own to help to create more virtue, more goodness in the world for the world's sake. Horses just don't do that. I mean, they can love us. They can love each other. They can love even little puppies, you know, like puppies and cats, and they can have great relationships with all kinds of things. But they don't love life in general, and they don't love God because they're unaware of what God is, and they can't take that awareness that they have of love, even if they thought it was something to do with God, they certainly have no understanding of it. And so that's the problem. And therefore, they don't exercise the choices that we do in regards to that. Humanity is special. It's our choices that leads life away from being centered mostly on its own kind and into the realm of a new venture of concerning and being for all life. Yes, that's us. And it's a struggle that we're going through right now on this planet. We have for a long time, in some respects, been struggling about this. Some people seek and concern themselves with life in general and are very much a proponent of life more abundant, life that is beautiful, and life that has the virtues in it that God, in their mind, has as its hallmark or as its structure. Now, there's another point to be made here, and I think it's fairly important, and that is that some people today are concerned about lower forms of life, but with a disregard for human life. And that is as much a commission of, we'll say, irresponsibility towards God as those that are not concerned with lower forms of life but may have some great concerns for humanity. It's not, you can't be exclusive and exclusionary about the state of love and state of purpose and freedom and the concern that you have in regards to all life if you exclude any part of it. And so that's where the big problem comes from. Now, why is that happening? I mean, why do we see today factions of humanity who exclude some parts of humanity as being part of the God that they believe in, and others sometimes excluding all of humanity? I know some very diehard, we'll call them scientifically minded people, who usually have a high level of arrogance, but not always, and who unfortunately have a great dislike in general for humanity. And so their concern may be for, you know, let's save the whales or get the seals in order and do this or that. But the point is that they may, at the same time, neglect and even have a disregard for humanity as a great and tremendous part of the system of hierarchy of life. And it's the respect that they may have for humanity may go only so far as to be concerned about those who are tremendously disadvantaged and who they treat more like subhuman in some respects. They are the poor who we must protect. While, granted, we must protect all people in a sense, but the test for humanity is to recognize that all parts of life, all parts, need to be closer to its creator, to their creator. And you cannot select. You can say, well, okay, I like the good guys, but anybody earning more than $250,000 a year, they're all bad people. So we don't care about them. We'll take all their cars away from them and their oil and whatever else and make them feel miserable. But it doesn't make sense if you really think about it. But it has a lot to do with the test for humanity. In general, part of the test has to do with exclusivity and arrogance and egotism and conditional love. All those things come together in a toxic formulation that leads ultimately to tyrannical ruling, to a sense of superiority, and a condemnation over the right for others to have choice. So it's almost like saying that those that are actually not exercising their choices properly and even have enough choice in their life, the only way they can operate is to limit the choices of virtually everybody else around them to be less than their own so they can feel in some way superior to them and in a minimum control them so that they can be rewarded through sometimes material gain and almost always through a sense of control and even force. Wow, this is God's test. It's part of the test. How do we change it so that we are succeeding in God's test? If this is part of it, and we're going to cover this all tonight, so I don't have to go into every part right now, but then it's time to start looking at some of the ways we can make changes so we can really pass this test and move on. Now, I'm going to tell you something. It's kind of suggested that only 30 to 40% at most in the next couple thousand years of humanity, if we're successful at all on Earth, will pass this test. You're going to say, well, whoa, that doesn't sound too cool. You know, one out of three. That may be. I hope that that's a misunderstanding or wrong, But if it's true, I can explain what it means. So let me go into that. And that is that in order to pass the test, you need to, a good portion of the time, and that's talking about like probably over 50% of the time. Now, I want you to think about this in terms of yourself and your own life. You need to be aware of the test over half the time when you're involved in making choices. Taking that awareness, you then need to use the awareness to help others to become more aware of the test in the choice you're making, and to in some way be of some service to them spiritually, which means helping them to understand God more themselves and them to experience God more through your own actions. It isn't through giving them things. It's through being an example of being aware and conscious that you achieve those results, and that finally you make choices that continually increase the virtue of others and don't destroy them about half or more of the time. Now, how far are we from that right now? Well, we don't have 33% to 40% of the population doing that half the time. Right now, we have about 2% of the population doing it about somewhere a few percent of the time in everything, every choice that they make, every interaction that they have. Now you can start saying yourself, that's not good. Sounds like we're not passing this test. If we only got a couple thousand years, maybe at most, it could be as little as a few hundred. That doesn't sound good, right? Okay. I would agree with you. I'm not trying to, make this a whitewash about where we're really at. Things are not great on Earth. Gee, is that an understatement? Okay. That's the problem. We have something that is obviously a dilemma, you can call it. And part of it is the encroachment of evil has been significant. God's test is to become aware, not just of God, but of everything that is not God. Let me say that one more time so that we are on the same page with this. God's test for humanity is for humanity to test itself to determine not just who or what and when God is, but what and if anything is not God at any time. Okay, that's a biggie, because you can see that if you're a Pollyanna and you walk around, oh, I see God, I'm going to do the best, I'm going to do nothing but good, and you walk around and you're getting jerked around, beat up and killed or whatever, and have everything taken away, and so because evil's having a field day, and you don't seem to have a clue of that. If the people that are running things are controlling others to be destructive and to take and to steal and to in corrupt ways to ruin the existence of good, and you ignore it, or you don't are aware of it, or you choose to hide from it because you're afraid, what's the result? You flunk. Don't pass the test. Because part of the test is not just to create more of God. It's to be aware and to be conscious of and to make choices to do something about those that are dark and especially evil that work behind the scenes. And they only can succeed. They can only succeed when most do not recognize them for what they are. Wow. Okay. So there's a big part of the test right there. And And this part, the second part that I'm mentioning, the negative, we'll call it, the dark side, is the side that most people want to have nothing to do with. Even if they are successful on the more positive side, they still do not want to admit to, they don't want to have anything to do with, they don't want to have a sense of, they don't want to have to do anything about the dark ones, especially evil. Nothing. So they pretend they don't exist. They were just born into poverty, and they had problems, and they had all the issues with their families, and it was we, the society, that made them into what they are, and they are just a product of our own delusional expressions of wrongfulness, etc., and our own greed, and our own lack of love, and everything. We just love those folks more, and they wouldn't be evil. Right? Wrong. No. If you think that way, you're not passing the test. Now you say, well, it's your opinion. I'm passing all the tests. Sure. Okay, go ahead. You don't have to listen to me. I'm so sure. I mean, you may find it fanciful to listen in and say, oh, I don't agree with anything he's saying. He's a crazy guy. Well, okay. That's all right. I mean, it's not really all right, because I know that we are in some ways connected, and I would like you to have a better understanding, and I think my understanding is mostly on the right side of the situation. Always open to hearing differences, always. But the most important element here is that if even a fraction of what I'm saying is right, we got problems. And if most of what I'm saying is right, we're in deep, deep problems. Deep, deep ones. Because just as it is very hard for someone to create goodness and virtue, it's vastly more difficult to be aware of and to literally struggle against the dark, evil. Much more difficult. That leads us into the next question, or series of questions about the situation. Okay. How come God doesn't get rid of the part of the test that's so hard for humans to do? I mean, why does God allow evil to be if it's such a bear, it's so difficult, and humans can barely deal with evil? Even when they are aware of it, they don't know what to do about it. They're afraid. Their own fear blocks them from seeing the right way. Why doesn't God just cut us a break here? You know, let's make it a little easier for us. I mean, this is one of the most difficult planets in the universe to be on. So, hello, we need some help here, you know. We'll all pray together. Maybe that'll work. Here's the problem. The test isn't made by God. God only allows the opportunity for the test to be. God doesn't directly interfere in the test. Now you can say, well, what about miracles? Why can't we have a miracle, get rid of all the evil? Well, that's contrary to the concept of freedom. If we're going to be free, God can't be calling all the shots and changing all the rules and making everything go away that we don't like, or it doesn't like. Here's the point. And it's a tough pill. Listen, the things I'm saying are probably going to discourage some people tonight, but we got to be frank about this. We're never going to get to the other side, and the other side is becoming something better than who we are today. We want to do that, right? All right. And as a world, I'm talking about not just individuals, but that is everybody. As many as we can get on board. Okay. Here's the quandary. We've got to have free choice. And the test is made by us. We are the creators of the test. We're not. God creates the opportunity for us to have tests. We create the test in ourselves. Let me give you an example. We're Earth. Okay. Everybody knows what Earth is like, right? We know our history. It's pretty bad, right? one civilization after another, knocking off millions of people and whatever. I mean, it's a crazy planet, right? You ever watched the History Channel or something like that? I mean, they go back, oh, well, this civilization came in and they killed 45,000 people on the first day. And I mean, it's like, what is this? I mean, animals aren't like this, right? Humans go around killing everybody and ravaging people and just destroying this and that. We're pretty barbaric, right? We're worse than barbaric. Okay, but here is the problem. We have to be free to make the test, and the test is that all these bad people became evil, and others follow them that are just dark but not yet evil. They're sort of in training. And there's, on a mass scale, nothing that can be done to change that, or it isn't humanity's test employer, then it would be truly God's. But the whole thing would become a puppet show. Of course, God's not going to act that way. We are given the freedom. But in that freedom comes the responsibility to be better than we have been, and to learn, and to understand, and to create something that's better than Earth. Let's look at two planets, Earth and planet Smiley, okay? Smiley is a great world. Smiley has been going down a road a little slower than us, a few million years longer than we have been in development, and because it had the options to go slow. And its main purpose isn't necessarily to justify evil. It has a more balanced approach, kind of a fourth ray-ish world. Earth is a third ray. Anyway, kind of really, really just a copacetic, nice, friendly environment. And occasionally they have something go wrong. There's some evil things that happen rarely. But not on a minute-by-minute basis. You got the terrible things that are happening all over the place. It's a small fraction of their life there on Smiley. But, you see, Earth was created as a laboratory to uncover new ways to fight some of the most awful ways that evil can exist. How did they get Earth to be that way? Well, it's sort of karma. They said all souls, and the souls' parents, we'll call them monads, that decided to come to Earth were called because this is your opportunity to really learn the worst, or deal with, I should say, the worst that humanity could ever offer, because some of your souls have flunked on prior planets, so they got all the flunkies who are coming over to Earth. As a matter of fact, a few came from Smiley. Yeah, they had a few kind of, you know, on the edge, not so great folks that weren't really smiling folks. They were kind of frowning folks. And so they left Smiley, and they decided to start their incarnations here on Earth. They have had a number on Smiley, but they just didn't do so well there. And Earth was a great opportunity to get it right and to even be a grand service to many other planets thousands of years from now that will be in Earth's position, and we've got to figure it all out from our point of view and be able to give as a great gift to all these other planets our wisdom of how we dealt with the worst of evil, an evil that is more mental than astral, an evil that is highly destructive to life, and successful in removing God as a part of many humans' lives. So this is what Earth is about. Smiley's doing their thing, they're doing the right thing, and they're just fine. But Earth is a not-so-friendly place. Now, our tests here are very different than the tests on Smiley. On Smiley, the worst test they have is like a nothing test here. Different set of tests for each world. Billions of worlds throughout the universe. millions in our own galaxy. You can start considering it from this standpoint. You say, oh, and Earth is in the, like, the, certainly a fraction of the most, what, of the 1% that is most dark and evil. Wow. Is it really that bad? Yeah. Based upon principles and angels' wisdom, it is. I don't have a list of millions of planets in this galaxy and billions in the universe to compare it to. But based upon the principles applied to judgment and understanding and reasoning, understanding the way things have been and are today, it's bad. It's very bad. Okay, so we've got our own test here, a very, very rough one. Other planets have a milder test. All of humanity is going through some level of test to be aware of, understand, and be more creative of their creator. They're all doing it. It's just here, it's at the extreme level because there's a lot of darkness and a considerable amount of evil compared to most other places. Are there worse places on Earth? A few. There's actually a galaxy. The whole galaxy is screwed up. It's one of the first galaxies that life was developed on. Didn't work out too good for them. But that's a rare thing. Very rare. Very few galaxies have that level of evil in them. But that's just the way it is. Okay, so where do we go from here? How do we deal with this nutty situation that we're in? Well, we're going to talk more about that when we come back. But I think the important and relevant thing here is to not get down about this. It's just to recognize that our test here is probably going to be one of the most extreme tests you can get. And by the way, I'll tell you how you can go to Smiley if you want. We all have that choice as a soul. So when we die from the astral world after the physical and the lower mental, and our consciousness melts with our soul, we're one thinking being at that point. We don't have to stay here because everything's based on choice. We can leave. And believe me, you can leave and go to a plethora of planets. The reason is that you can travel thousands of light years from Earth in all directions. And you're not going to be able to make it out of the galaxy realm. But you certainly can go to many other planets, and Smiley's one of them. And so if you want to, and if you think it's the better thing to do, you will. Now, I can say the chances are likely that we're going to do that because we've been here for a while, and we keep choosing to reincarnate here. So for reasons which some of us may be unaware, we are here because we are choosing to be. Now, of course, evil people are choosing to be here because this is the greatest place to be. If you're evil, this is one of the top planets to be on. Whoa, think about that. That is not too great. Okay, so listen, we're going to come back in, about 2.5 minutes, and then I'll go through a lot more about what this test is about, how we can do better at passing it ourselves. And deal with those people who aren't doing so well. Okay, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're talking about God's test for humanity, and hopefully you heard the first part. That's really humanity's test for humanity, with God in the background, making sure we have the ability to do such a test, but not choosing the tests we are. Okay, so what are some of the tests that we're choosing for ourselves that are so ominous and that have tremendous consequences for the whole planet? Well, at the present time, I'm going to start from now. I mean, I could go historical, but I'm afraid I'll eat up too much of the show doing that. Maybe if we have enough time, I'll talk about some of the historical things too. But right now, I want to start with right now, so because I think that's pretty important, you know. Okay. Right now, we are dealing with the question of tyranny and the desire on some people's part to not have to choose native and extremely important freedoms for themselves versus, okay, being taken care of. Being coveted, in their minds at least, and enjoying the parental or false parental viewpoints of being a child when you're really an adult, and the fear of growing up, which is really underneath that particular point of view. We're fighting in that arena. That's one of the conflicts we're in. And the test is whether we really want to be free adult people, that the basic and native meaning our inalienable rights are kept by ourselves, for ourselves, and guided by the wisdom of ourselves, or do we want to be the masses controlled by a central governing force that most of the time is doing so for the benefit of the few who seek to have power and control over the many? with the many being fearful of growing up and recognizing this is their choice that they're not taking, choosing not to take. Now, the test is about whether we as people in various ways and in various kinds of ways, which have to do with different countries and governments and a whole bunch of things, are seeking to expose and to challenge darkness and evil in governments. And it's not just for the people who live in a specific country or countries where this is happening, because it's really happening everywhere on some level. But some countries it's much worse, and the dark side has become the prominent side. But at any rate, it's about all of us being aware that this evil is taking place and willing to do something about it from our position in the world. So if you're a country that it isn't happening directly in very much, and you allow it to be going on in another country that it is taking place in, when I say allow, I'm not talking about forcibly through violence necessarily changing the situation, but there are many things other than that, and violence may be one of the things you're forced into by evil. But regardless, the important element here is that are you willing to give up, sacrifice, to create a more godly world, or are you not? I'm not talking about necessarily nation building either. Some people refer to that, because nation building means that we're still telling others how they must live. Now, that's not what I'm talking about at all. If we're godly, the test for others is for them to make the choice, but we can assist them. Let me give you an example. A couple years ago, in 2009, May, June of 2009, the people in Iran, 60% of them, we know, or we think we know, want to have a different government and want to have freedoms that they've had in the past, and would like more of a country similar to the United States and some other countries that exist as republican democracies with freedoms. And they don't have that. They have a rigid type of theocracy that is radical and seeks to kill others and then enslave the remainder under their control. And, of course, they've already done this in Iran. So there were millions of people, literally, who were willing to risk their lives and sacrifice to attain a new level of freedom and probably to attempt to remove from power the people that were controlling. We, in other nations, decided, but we were the leading nation when we did this, to not interfere. What didn't we do, and how did that affect things? Well, looking at this, again, I'm dealing with this right now. I could go back in history, and there's all kinds of examples of this. But I want to deal with now because it's so relevant to now, because we're about to get into a war with Iran, and it's important to recognize that getting into that war is a karmic result of our own choices just a few years ago. So, less than 3 years ago, we're making wrong choices. All right. So, what happened was the United States made a choice to not do the following. To disrupt the economic system of the ruling heads of Iran. Now, what is the economic system? Well, right now, they make a lot of money on some amounts of oil sales, on certain other commerce that they have. And the way they make that money is that it all goes into the accounts of the ruling class, which is the mullahs, and the leaning theocratical people who have, we'll say, taken upon themselves the authority over all others. It says so in their own quote-unquote constitution that these people have the absolute right to do whatever they choose. So, with that right, they take in a couple $100 billion a year. They take out of that maybe 10% or more into bank accounts that they maintain for themselves, and then the rest of the money is distributed to those in the government and outside who go along with their power. So if you go along with their power and you have a business, they'll help you through a socialistic form of society in which they control the main industries. And you can enjoy a higher standard of living than those who work against the government. And this controls, in their minds, most of the population. But it doesn't really. But it does, to their sense of it. Now, what would you do? Well, if in 2009, 3 years ago almost to right now, the United States said, well, first thing we're going to do is all these accounts these people have, we're taking the money out of them. Now, it would have to be more than just the United States, but just every bank that cooperates with us throughout the world. Take all their money. Well, let me tell you something. When you take all their money, that's a problem for them. And then the next thing you do is that in order for them to sell the oil, the money has to go through foreign banks. You stop that money, too. They can continue to ship the oil unless we choose to block it. We don't need to because they're not going to keep shipping if they can't get any money for it. You see. All right. That's a biggie. What if we had done that in in March of 2009? Whoa. Big change. Big change. Huge change. What else should we have done? Well, right now they're making weapons. They're trying to make weapons of mass destruction. We could have shut down every source of the materials they needed for those weapons. Oh, but they mostly came from North Korea and China. Did they? Well, we could have had a little talk with China 3 years ago. So, you know what? Now you got $1 trillion worth of treasury notes. We're not going to honor them. That's it. You got 30 days to cease all business with Iran. You don't cease it. Bye bye. And we're not going to trade with you either. Oh, I know. We get all kinds of things from China. Terrible, terrible things. Walmart would have a fit. But you know what? In 6 months. We would start making some of those things that we've been buying from China. We'd make them better. And China would stop trading with Iran. Why? Because their government would start to fail. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. So you say, well, but they might go to war with us. Really? They got 200 nuclear weapons. We got 2,000? They've got 4 submarines that are nuclear-powered. We got 400? Don't think so. Not good odds. Chinese are very practical people, particularly the communists are. They've learned practicality, if nothing else. They tried a radical approach, like Iran is. Didn't work. Now they say we'll have practical communism. When it works, it makes us rich and happy. Good. When it doesn't, we'll pretend we're capitalists until we can destroy the capitalists, they think. Okay, so there you go. So all of a sudden, the trade stops. And you can say, okay, but what about North Korea? Oh, I got a great thing for North Korea. We block off everything going in and out of North Korea. There, we do stop things from happening. So is that a good thing? Well, maybe. There are better ways, possibly, of having dealt with North Korea for the last 10 or 15 years. But certainly 3 years ago, we could have pulled their chain pretty hard. Also, I forget the year, they're starving to death over there. I don't know why we're feeding them. If you had an ugly monster in your backyard that's trying to get into your house and kill you, would you keep sending food aid into the yard? Or would you say, you know what? That monster would be a lot easier to deal with if it was really starving, and maybe we could retrain it after it's so hungry that it can't even move? Think about that. All right, so get back to the situation. Where do we get into these crazy ideas from? Well, part of it is that the people that want to make it so that countries like Iran are, we'll say, equal to the United States, are themselves like the people who run Iran. Now you do your own thinking about this. So if you have a common desire that matches the desire of evil, even if you pretend to not be evil, your actions give away who you are and what you're doing. We've got to look at this from a realistic viewpoint. It's not good. Now, remember, God's test for humanity is not whether or not Iran remains the way it is. God's test for humanity is whether everybody sees Iran for what it is and those that help Iran to remain what it is as being one and the same. Remember that. That's the test. And what we're willing to sacrifice to change these terrible odds and situations. Now, have we abandoned, for the most part, the country of Israel? Yeah. A couple years ago, we said their borders should go back to the 67 borders that they couldn't possibly have survived more than 7 days with during the Seven-Day War and a couple over after that. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is, something is not going right with the United States government and with the governments that support some of the recent viewpoints. Well, what's going to happen? What's the karma from all this? The karma from all this is that when you abandon your allies and you sell them out for basically the need and desire to control and to maybe make the United States like Iran in some weird way or some other kind of communist regime like China, if that's what you're looking to do, you're on the side of you. Okay. But at the same time, the test leads to karmic implications, because any time you're not using your senses in an awareness to eventually lead to the creation of light in the world, more virtue, the results can be and will be karmically awful. And what could be more awful in my mind, I don't know, than war. We've had relentless war on this planet since all of recorded history. And again, I'm not going back there to go over every one of them, but at least not in today's show. But the point is, we all know that. It's war after war after war, and people say, well, I'm tired of war. Let's just forget about doing wars. How about let's start living in an enlightened way with wisdom? With wisdom. Okay, so what can we do then? How do we deal with this? Because we've created a karma that now is going to lead to war. Oh, but it's just Israel. Israel's going to bomb them with some low-grade nuclear weapons, and they'll take out these things. Well, first of all, they don't have to use low-grade nuclear weapons. If just last month we had agreed to give them bunker-busting bombs, more than four that they probably have, and they probably need 40, to take out all those nuclear sites with the least amount of human casualties, hopefully. Instead, they're going to have to make low-grade but using tactical kinds of bombs that maybe have conventional weapons in them, too, to knock out these facilities, because that's the only thing that's going to do it besides the bunker bustings that we have made. And so we're forcing this to be a nuclear strike. It's going to be minor compared to some other things that we've seen with nuclear bombs going off, even in tests, but it's still going to be serious. And it's going to be proactive. First strike. A lot of people are going to be upset about it. Politically, it's going to create havoc in the world. Now you can say, well, did the Israelis say they can probably wait another month or two? Yeah, maybe they can. They can't wait past that. So it seems inevitable. Oh, but they won't do it because if they release those nuclear bombs, the world will condemn them. Hey, I got to tell you something. When your back's against the wall and your gun and their opponent's gun is at your head, you don't worry too much about what the world thinks anymore. Yeah. Okay, so let's say there's this limited nuclear exchange. Well, then what's the next step? Well, the next step is the ruling class, if they don't knock them all off, which I would, by the way, but I don't think they will, of Iran now gets all of their surrogates out, Hezbollah, Hamas, PLO, anybody that will go along with them. The Syrians, mostly the Iranians that were sent to Syria, 3,000 more troops. And if the Egyptians will just get in, who knows? But get them to all attack Israel at the same time. But you can't win a war when you have hundreds of tactical nuclear weapons and a couple hundred strategic or more. You just can't win a war that way. Because when it's existential, which this is, the nation that is facing obliteration will use whatever weapons they have to defend themselves and to be offensive as well. Okay. So this is an example. This is an example of how we have screwed up things and where we are at now. What's the best outcome that can happen from this? Well, the best outcome would be if the Iranians that remain, and hopefully most of the Iranian people that are not evil, if they were to proactively oust their government. But it's going to take more than just the Israelis attacking Iran for that to happen, and I don't know if the more is available. It would take the United States and many other countries helping clandestinely behind the scenes for this to take place, and they better be preparing for it right now. It's too late once Iran is attacked. Okay, so you want to have that country taken over. And I'm using this as an example. You can use a similar example with different strategies on countries like North Korea, etc. North Korea is a very special example because way over half the people in North Korea at the present time pretend to support the existing regime, partly because so many of the people are in the army. It's not the majority, but there's a lot of them, and you always have like relatives, therefore, someone in the army, are going to be supporting the army because they have a relative in them. So it's a difficult thing, but it actually could turn over if we got them very hungry first. Sending them food, not a good idea. You don't feed the monster. Especially a nuclear-armed monster. Okay, so we don't see evil. Now you could say, well, everybody thinks North Korea is evil, though. How can you say we don't see evil? Okay. Well, here's the problem. If we see evil, why do we feed it? If we see evil, why do we not stop it from gaining the kinds of weapons that could be totally destructive to any country? If we see evil, why do we not encourage it to destroy itself rather than to grow? Why do we ever believe what it says when for the 50th, 100th time, it just wants to talk, it just wants to be friends today? Even if there's a nuclear test in its future tomorrow, today is the day we should look at. Forget about what it used to do and forget about tomorrow. Let's just talk. We're good guys. Could you give us some food while we're talking? I mean, after all, it's only polite. If we're going to talk, you got to feed us. Right? God's test for humanity. Okay. And we create these tests ourselves. Believe me, God did not arm the North Koreans. In a weird way, we did. Now, I don't want to go through the implications, but in the end, if you go through all of the political gyrations in the last 25 years, it's very clear that North Korea had no possibility of becoming a nuclear nation if each and every president and Congress in the United States had in their mind that these guys are really evil and we better do something about it and we can't let them get nuclear anything. I want you to think about this. 25 years ago, how hard would it have been? And I want you to, what was 25 years ago? But 25 years ago, the Soviet Union was falling apart. Right. How hard would it have been to starve out Korea, North Korea, and to have a general uprising in comparison to today, as an example? Do you think it would be easier or harder today? Isn't that? Okay, so have we been going in the right direction? No. That's obvious. We have not been going in the right direction. And we haven't been going in the right direction in this particular sense. Now, I'm going to deal with all kinds of other subjects right after this. But in this particular sense, we haven't been going in the right direction ever. Ever. This world continually makes the same wrong choice. We may not, in our country, we may not believe, quote-unquote, that the government has paternal rights over people, etc. But we have gradually moved in that direction. And the most, by the way, in the last few years. And we have supported it, if not by abstention, then sometimes by actual doing many things in a lot of other countries. Now, why in the heck would we do something like that? Because we don't see evil, we don't believe in it, and there's evil within our own government that is corruption, that sees it to their benefit for power and control and greed and money to actually go the wrong way. Okay. What's some other tests? Covered that one, and I hope I didn't way which wasn't too, we'll say, critical. All right. Another test for humanity is in the realm of education. We like to think that we are the enlightened. We have our schools, and we have our higher universities, and everything else, where we teach such great things. Do we? Do we teach people to be open-minded? Well, the only way you can teach somebody to be open-minded is for the teacher to be open-minded. Ooh, how many teachers are open-minded? Well, if we're talking about grade school and to some extent high school, they're controlled by mostly regional issues, like school boards, etc. And even if a teacher wants to be open-minded, they are pretty much required to teach a certain curriculum, which may be very closed-minded in many ways. Ooh, that sounds so good. That sounds so good. What else are we supposed to teach besides open-mindedness? How about thoroughness in examination of concepts to find truth so we can endow our younger folks with wisdom? How many schools do that? Well, it requires that students not be told the truth, but they must find it for themselves and then incorporate it in decisions that they make on a daily basis so they can develop wisdom. How many schools you don't like are like that? Oh, I know a Montessori school that does it with four-year-olds. Yeah, maybe they do. Maybe. How many kids go to Montessori schools? And how many Montessori schools actually do run that way? Not too many kids go. Okay. What is it like, generally? Well, it's controlled by politics. It's controlled by unions who are more concerned about the longevity of and the amount of money and control that their teachers need than they are about the things I just mentioned that need to be educated in children at a very early age. And that's the thing is, it's you can't really teach it. You've got to be it. The school has to be it. The teacher has to be it. The school board has to be it. If there's a union, the union has to be it. If there's no union, then those that in some way have an interest in and control within the system of the school, they need to be it too. Wow. And it needs to dovetail with parents who agree with the concept of children being open-minded, free-thinking, and conceptually minded, seeking to find truth themselves and incorporate it within their life, and to be a shining example of virtue. Wow. Now, that's another problem, because no matter where you go, it's very rare to find education that develops us into more enlightened, more spiritual, more creative means. Many times it's in spite and not because of education that people develop these great qualities in themselves. Wow. That's kind of a scary idea, isn't it? So universal education in and of itself does not turn out to be necessarily a good thing. And that's where the problem lies. It lies in the concept that education is like a thing that you can mold into a person, and when they get out, they're just going to all be these little cookie-cutter examples of a good person, and they don't recognize the test for humanity, which is that those kids have to have freedom, or younger people, because they're not always children, per se. And they need to develop awareness and consciousness in the same things that I talked about at the beginning of the show, through the educational system. And instead, our educational systems are oftentimes at war with these concepts, fighting against. How many universities have professors that are open-minded, that allow and seek the different thought from their students than their own? Whoa. 1, get rid of tenure. 2, sever the relationship between money, finances, and education. There should be no connection between the two. So if you have public education, the sources of the money for the public education do not control the realm of education, only the material things that are needed for education. Okay, sounds good. What about the schools that people pay for? Well, it's encouraged those. It's not allowed those private schools that come. It's allowed that to happen. What about the schools that are creative and that lie outside of governmental control? Wow, charter schools. That is a really good answer. Any place charter schools have been adopted, education improves because choice improves. And when choice improves from the top down, you get more of it from the bottom up. But it's still a problem because you can still have the bodies that be in control of those schools still not exercising open-mindedness and freedom of thought and allowing, even insisting, that teachers follow the same kind of, we'll say, teaching methodology. Many of them do exactly the opposite. They want to be more like a public school. Oh, well, they got a curriculum. We'll make sure ours is followed to the letter. They're going to just teach them this and that or whatever. Yeah, that's a problem. How else can we solve this? Well, school should be an extension of parenting and home. And the extension should be that it supports the model of the house or the home, but at the same time, it allows children to garner new ideas and thoughts that may not even be present in the parental environment, but those ideas and thoughts that students have the right to challenge with their parental upbringing and find it not acceptable. Oh, you don't have that going on in schools. What they teach is what they teach, and then you're expected to know it and learn it, and that's it. And if you believe something differently and you let it be known, you may be ostracized or fail. Well, that's a terrible outcome. All right. So this is a big deal. Why is it such a big deal? Because instead of young people becoming wise by the age of 28, many are not getting wise until they're like in their 40s or later. All of that time leads to failure in life and poor decisions and voting that supports governmental issues in the wrong direction. Whoa. You want to develop wisdom in your population as early as possible and as much as possible to thwart the dark side. And remember, Earth is peculiar in its darkness. We have a lot. And so if we don't do something about it, and we wait for the natural course of things to take place, we waste 20 years or more of each person's life because they weren't educated in a way that led them to a wise life. They weren't maybe parentally brought up in a way that's helpful. Let's talk about that family structure. What's God's test for humanity and family? Most families base their interactions on personal issues. What are those? Personal issues deal with the struggle for power and control and authority. They are specific to the material world while we're materially alive, because that's where most of our sense comes from. And they are immature. The best way to have family is based upon soul values, soul expressions of behavior and thought. And those kind of families raise amazing kids. because what happens is children learn what they live, not what they're taught. You've heard that poem, possibly. I love that poem. It's great. Unknown author, but it's a great poem. And so if you can imagine this, a family structure should be as virtuous as possible and follow most of the things that, that I talk about on this show. If your family is run that way, then the authority of the parents comes from God and not from, I make the money, this is my house, I'm older than you, I'm stronger than you, I'm bigger than you. The government says I can do what I want with you till you're 18, kind of thought. Instead, you work from the model of not control, but of responsibility. I have these responsibilities to help you grow into becoming the best person possible, closer to your soul than to your personal interests. I will help you to be as virtuous in creation as any possibility. I will help get you the best education, even if I have to go outside the system to find that, or teach you myself, whatever it's going to take. I see you as a soul in process of development. When your family structure is based upon that kind of parenting, good things will take place. And as a foundation of society, that's more important than even the educational system, because children will reject a bad educational system if they come from a sold family. It generally is best done with the parents, not a parent. Because there's two sides to the equation. The male parent is going to be more towards the first part of God's mind, and the female more towards the second. And so the spiritual side needs to be balanced together. The spirit is those two things together, and you can't separate them. Is it impossible for one or the other to raise a child in a virtuous way? No. It's just more difficult. And these days, I just like doing things that are less difficult, don't you? Because you can't necessarily manufacture having parents, but you can have people assisting if there's only one parent available. That could be sort of surrogate. And particularly if they're of the opposite sex, there's some benefit. What about two people who are homosexual? They're going, no matter what, they're going to imbalance the situation. They can try, and they can bring others in of the opposite sex to at least be surrogates. That may be of some help. There's no guarantee that it'll work. I'm just suggesting. But it's better than not. So two, weird as it sounds, two people of the same sex may be worse than just one person. Because they're doubling the amount of input from only one side of the equation. It doesn't have to be that way. And there's some homosexual people who are very virtuous in and of their own right and can make up for some of the differences. I'm just saying, again, which way is easier? Okay. So, looking at it from the standpoint of the process, where are we failing? Remember, this is a test. It's all a test. The greatest failure is in materiality while we're physically alive. It's in materiality. Because if you look at, as I have anyway, what seems to be what's going wrong the most in families, too much of family life is based upon materiality, which in some cases is money or things and the possession of such or the desire of such. When family life is based upon that element, it completely corrupts the soul. The soul doesn't have a chance if that's really what it's all about. And that denotes a terrible failure. You can say, well, wait a second. Why can't we all be prosperous and have lots of positive things. So things are good, they're not bad. Why can't we have that and not worry so much about being overly material? Well, one is not in exclusion to the other, but in time and energy, one can replace the other, and that can be the problem. If you spend most of your time and energy trying to get things, then the results will be that's the way the children learn to live, they learn what they live, and they will continue that means of life, which makes it very difficult for them to create more of God. And they don't see God as being first. I'm not saying they don't see God at all. I'm not saying they don't sometimes see evil. But both will be much more difficult in a family in which the emphasis is on, and maybe the most amount of thought and talk and everything is about things. There's nothing wrong with having things. Nothing. Things are okay. They create opportunities for people to further interact together. Without things, we would have far less interaction, and far less interaction is not what God's plan is. More is. But if the interaction is all based on materiality, that leads to evil and forces. Balance, very important. Spiritual balance is key here. No more than one-third of one's consciousness and awareness and interaction from that awareness should involve material things. I'm going to say it one more time. If in your family or in your life, more than one-third of your time and energy is spent on material things, you're making a mistake. Where's the other two-thirds need to be? Is to be on creation and purpose and will and choices joined with consciousness or love and planning and inclusiveness. And I'm talking about love in an unconditional sense, not a conditional. That's where the two-thirds have to be. Spirit. Two-thirds of your life needs to be spiritual, no more than one-third material. You can figure it out for yourself. Take the hours in the day, your thoughts, your actions, and see what it all adds up to. You can do it for yourself. You can figure it out for yourself. I'm giving you straight and simple formulas. If you think I'm wrong, that's okay. If you think I'm right, hey, make the change. The family is the structure through which most people are inculcated for the rest of their lives. Education is secondary. And the results are profound. People take decades to overcome a family that is materialistic and anti-soul. And it may not be a productive life for that reason. The test is on every parent or every sibling or everyone involved in this to understand the concepts that I'm suggesting here, check them out and see if I'm right. Try a month this way or that way and see if things get better. Are they better that way? And remember, the parents are the leaders. The children cannot substitute. You can't advocate. So, okay, I'll leave it up to the kids. If they want to do what you said, fine. Otherwise, that's the way it's going to be. That's crazy. That isn't the idea here. You can't leave it up to them. You can help them to understand it and teach them and lead them by your own sacrifices and willingness to change yourself. They will then choose to be part of that. If you do it right. Not, well, you're going to live this way. I won't live that way, but you're going to live this way because you're the child. No, that doesn't work at all. Nothing will backfire more than that. Well, that's going to turn out to be a disaster. You're not willing to make the changes yourself. Don't expect your kids to change. Come on. All right. That, again, it's much easier if you have parents of opposite sexes doing this. It will work better. If you don't, live within the structure that you've decided to or have to or whatever and make the best you can of it. All right. Rest of the tests. Let's go to some more of them. Again, I'm sticking with right now. I'm not going to go back. It would be very interesting to do a show on this in the historical sense. Boy, it would be fascinating, but not for today. All right. So what are some of the other parts that this test is so prevalent in? Well, one of the areas that it's prevalent in is in the expression of, we'll call it, the beauty and art side, or the kind of composite element of human expression of things outside of humanness or humanity. Most people don't understand what art is. Art is the test of a person's ability to either create beauty or help others to understand where beauty is missing. Beauty is God. When beauty is missing, and what most people call it ugliness prevails, you end up with darkness and evil. Okay, so where does this fall into where we are today? Well, we know the third ray's gone kind of crazy, and it kind of is pushing out a lot of beauty out of things. It tends to do that when it gets very big, but also at the same time very selfish. It becomes things become uglier. We have a lot of ugliness. Mostly, of course, in the field that I'm talking about, the expression of our creation, of things outside of just ourselves. Now, some people say, well, even if you create things, some things about yourself, that could be a form of art, and I'll go along with that because they're talking about their physical bodies in some ways. Bodybuilders might say that. Models and people in beauty contests might. I mean, you know, I allow all those things to be possible. The important thing here is, why are we in such a dilemma right now? Well, some of the areas that is particularly bad is in the interaction mode. And some of the interaction mode comes from passive observing rather than necessarily participating. And that's where movies and television, all kinds of media issues become a problem. This is leading to a corruption of what art was supposed to be. We now have many people believing that the expression of an art form that in and of itself is both ugly but doesn't bring anybody to a higher sense of beauty because of it is okay. So in other words, if I create a movie that in 2 hours makes everybody feel awful, and it doesn't enlighten anybody about anything, but, you know, I got a lot of people running around with chainsaws and stuff, cutting people up and chopping up this or that and turning into little monsters and, you know living deads and whatever. All that stuff that we think of as our typical movie these days, maybe average anyway, is not an art form that leads to beauty. And you could say, well, we have a freedom to express ourselves. Well, yeah, I didn't say you don't. God said you have the freedom. I'm not going to argue with God. But if you choose to create something as an art form that only leads to ugliness and to darkness and has no redemption within it, outside of that, that's what it does. You're on the wrong side. And lots of people are on the side now. Okay. I'm not saying we should censure that. No, absolutely not. The best censorship for anything that is evil, the best, is to not defeat it. The first thing you do is you don't make evil bigger. How do you make movies bigger? By going to see them. And that's true even if you watch television, because then they hit you with sponsors that you're going to buy their products for, who are sponsoring the dark stuff on the television. So the same thing. So don't expose yourself to these things where there is material gain through the process, which is almost always the case. This stars those kinds of art forms. And as an example, I'm not just picking on movies here, it could be anything. Then those movies are not going to get made. That's why I like capitalism. Because if you don't make money, there isn't some parental government who's going to come in and say, well, we'll pay for that movie because it helps our government. It shows that corruption really isn't so bad in government. We're just good guys here. So we like that kind of propaganda film, and you can make it. That's evil. Know it, feel it, taste it, sense it in every way. That's evil. But in a true open economy, free economy, if people refuse to expose themselves to the ugliness, refuse to participate in it, then it goes away. It just goes away. Because there's nobody willing to put up money to do it. Now, I shouldn't say there's nobody. There's going to be a few. There's going to be a few radical people in a political sense that have an ulterior motive, and they may make movies. But those movies, if nobody sees, still don't do them any good, because eventually they only have a one run, so to speak. They don't end up on TV and getting shown over again because nobody wants to sponsor it. Yeah, that's true. How do we improve people's consciousness about the difference between ugly and beautiful? The definition of beautiful is that it improves the senses of those who experience it. The senses are improved, which then leads to an improvement in awareness, and then leads to higher consciousness. The definition of ugliness, or non-beauty, is that the senses are diminished to some level from the experience of whatever it is that the person is sensing. And in that diminished sense, they lose consciousness, lose love and inclusiveness, and are prone to becoming darker and victims of darkness, including evil. Okay? It's simple. Nothing complicated about it. I don't think, you know, everybody says, oh, you can't define these things. Well, they haven't talked to me yet. I can define them within very, very simple definitions that is behavioral in some respects and certainly measurable in others. Can you measure somebody's senses? Yes. Can you measure your own? Yes. If you think I'm wrong, check it out. It's measurable. Am I speaking of science or fantasy? Science. Anything that can be measured and determined to be truthful or not is science. Yeah, honestly. Truth can be determined almost always through some form of measurement and mathematical calculation. Truth is not the highest standard that humans have to live by, ultimately, but it's the one that presently we're being tested on the most. There's much higher things than truth. But right for right now, I'll settle for that. You say, well, what's higher than truth? Well, beauty is actually higher than truth. But right now, we can't even figure out what beauty is without understanding truth. So we got to get to the truth, and the truth is through understanding how much our senses are affected, good or bad, in a certain situation. Can you do that for your children? Yes. Can you do it for yourselves? Yes. Can you do it for people you don't even know? Yes. But it's more difficult. If you don't know them, then you have to have a lot of other objective ways of determining it. And it can or cannot be done reasonably. It's easier to know people. Let's move on. let's talk about another area that God is testing us. Let's talk about, it's sort of about family. We're going to jump to the next thing connected to it, and that's interpersonal relationships between people of either the opposite sex or having a loving relationship together, regardless of what sexual kind of relations they're having. People who are close on an intimate, in an intimate way. Why is that so important? What the heck is the test about that? And why are we having such a problem with it? The problem is that most people don't stay married. Well, why is marriage so important? The reason is this. Part of the test of marriage is to learn what it's like to be someone else who's as different from you as at least their sex. But I want marriage for people who are homosexuals too. Okay, fine. That's all right if you want to answer. But generally speaking, that's the concept of marriage. People are different in a sexual way, and then they're different in many other ways between the sexes. Why is it so important to experience somebody on the most intimate of levels through these most, we'll say, basic differences? The reason is this. When we get close at that level of intimacy, we become more open-minded. We become more loving and less, we'll say, stingy and selfish, because we're willing to give to the other person as though they are ourselves. We become more centered in ways outside of our personal interests, as we're living with and for others, our spouse, and if there are children, the children. And the whole expectation of some level of permanence, at least in the physical life. These add up to a very interesting combination that allows human beings to be tested in numerous but and very important ways. We learn to become unjealous. And you could say, well, wouldn't you get more jealous if you have a wife than if you don't have a wife? No. Or a husband, if you don't have a husband. Because the ability to accept and then create bonds with another person, bond, leads to the wisdom of an unjealous person. You can look at it from this standpoint. The wise person is neither jealous nor possessive. The wise person is almost never demanding and, we'll say, controlling. The wise person recognizes that the freedom bestowed upon anyone intimately with us, but this is true, this eventually leads to everybody, but it starts with the intimate ones. Anyone intimate to us is the freedom that we gain ourselves. And the loss of that is the loss of freedom in ourselves. Possibly the most miserable people are people who are possessive, jealous, and controlling. They are more prone to becoming evil than almost anyone else. And especially if it involves the intimate person in their life. So how important is the concept of marriage in a God sense? Really important. How much is that a test for humanity? It's an important one because it leads to a wiser, better person or people just by its very existence. So was God wise in making it possible for this test by making us sexual beings? Yeah, you bet. Does it work best for people who are heterosexual compared to homosexual? Yes. Homosexuals have a lot of difficulties in these areas. Can it be achieved at some level between homosexuals? Yeah. But again, tough road, very tough, and not likely to be as successful. But regardless, the general concept here is not about what your beliefs are in terms of sexuality. It's all about the bigger things that are part of the test for community. Now, what about people who don't want to be married? Let's say they give their whole life to humanity in some other way. There's great people who have done this. Saints who have done it. What about them? That's fine. Every part of the test is chosen by humanity, and every part of humanity, down to the individual, chooses the test that they are part of. So it's all up to us. Nobody says you got to get married to be part of God's test for humanity. Nobody, including God. If you choose to participate in part of this, it's your choice. If you do so admirably, with great, great consciousness, love, and produce the very best results you can. Because at some point, it all comes back if you don't. Someone is being obstinate and difficult who's intimate with you. Oh, my, what should you do? Did you become obstinate and difficult? No. Okay, you're obstinate and difficult. Should you let them know it? Sure. Communicate. But recognize that the challenge here is to help them and to not be so yourself. Not to say, oh, I'm going to do the same thing. We'll have a big fight. No. They're an extension of you. You're learning to be one, but still be individuals. That's the same as being a soul. A soul is an individual that is also joined to all other souls at the same time. So this is where it starts. It starts with those that we are intimate with. And you need to be intimate with only one person at least at a time, and preferably not every other week, a new one. But that doesn't seem to work. Now, what if it's every other decade? Hey, you figure it out for yourself, whatever works. Okay. But every other week, that's a bunch of nonsense. I'm monogamous for this week. I'm monogamous for at least 4 days. No, that's not the solution, because the intimacy takes months and years. And the challenge of the test is that long. It's not going to work with you. Just swap around every few days or weeks or whatever it's going to be. That's not a solution. Some people want to believe it is. Okay, well, you'll figure it out, but it's probably not going to be too good for you. All right. My suggestion is that you find the right person, of course. And when you do, you make sure that this is a commitment for as long as you can see it producing the results that we've talked about today. A soul level of result. That's something you personally necessarily have to have. As a matter of fact, if things don't work out in a material or a controlling or secure sense, well, I wasn't secure, so I had to leave the relationship. No, that's nonsense. But they weren't making as much money as I wanted. Oh, that's complete crap. See it as the extension of your own problems and how you're going to solve those problems together. Wow. Okay, that changes everything in that respect. Let me move on to another subject, because I can keep going with this probably for hours and hours and hours. All right, where's the rest of God's test for humanity? Let's talk about it in terms, and this is going to be a difficult one for some people to recognize, in terms of being right. Okay. And a lot of people say, well, I don't need to be right. as long as nobody ever reminds me I'm wrong. Okay. I don't need to be right as long as I don't know that anybody's more right than I am. Okay. I don't need to be right most of the time, except when I feel like being right. Okay. This is what I call the egotistical and arrogance level. And this is a huge test because it has to do with something called comma monastic thinking. In other words, I feel something, therefore I must be right, and I'll think in a way that it is. Okay. Yeah, that doesn't work. Being humble is the answer for the need to be right. I'm going to end tonight's show with this subject. So, the greatest test for humanity is in being humble. You could say, oh, wait a second. What about all those other things you were just talking about? How can you end the show with this thing, humility, like it's in some kind of... What about all those other things? They sound very important. Well, they may. But let me explain. Humility is the ability to be a part of the next kingdom from humanity. We'll call it the superhuman kingdom. But that's what humility is. It's the foundation of us being something more than who we are right now. And without that foundation, we can't enter the next kingdom. It's called the kingdom of souls, officially. We can't be a liberated, free soul living in any dimension that the soul can exist in as a soul. We're not souls here. We have a soul in the monastic world, the higher monastic world. But we're not the soul here. We're a selfish, kind of miserable human being. And we can get there every time we exercise humility. Humility is absolutely extinguishing any need to be right in place of the need to be loving in a universal sense, not a conditional one, one where you get something back because you're loving, and being open-minded and allowing others to think freely and to oppose your thought, even helping them to oppose your thought at times. And always accepting when someone else says, oh, that's just the way it should be. Okay, I accept what you say. Help me to understand more so I can fully grasp it. And once I got that, then we're on the same page. And if you can't get that in your exchange with them, you may go to other sources, and eventually you might discover that no matter what, they are mistaken, but that doesn't mean you were right. It just means that they were mistaken. And then finding rightness comes from consciousness, understanding, not from either what you think is your knowledge or just your opinion and your feeling, which is more likely what most people do. That's a comma monastic. Comma means feeling or emotion. And then mentally thinking, which is always bad. It leads to more evil than anything else. So being right is a real problem. And it's becoming more and more a problem with our peculiar sub-race and race of people on Earth right now. It's the nature of what's wrong with Earth itself. Humility is the answer. Humility brings us to being souls right here, right now. And there's nothing more that I can say than live your life with humility. And everything else covered in this show will go easier and better for you. Okay, well, we've covered as best as I can within the time God's test for humanity. And I hope this has made some sense. And with those last words of being humble, I'm going to end tonight's show and hope that you have a great one for the rest of the week. Until next time. And this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.